I'd like to start this morning with the story of two boys. As I tell you about the boys, I want you to take mental notes of what comes to mind as you form your first impressions based solely on the information provided to you. Feel free to close your eyes if it will help you paint a clearer picture. The first boy grew up the son of a single mother who lived with her parents in a mobile home park. She was 17 when she had him. His father had left before he was born, shortly after pulling a gun on the boy's grandfather in an attempted robbery. The boy's grandfather was not at all in favor of her having the baby. He wanted her to either have an abortion or give the baby up for adoption. Yet she insisted on having and keeping the baby. The boy was a little different. He and others knew there was something about him. The kids at school called him weird, fat, shy, gay. And those were the nice kids. So he preferred to pass his time in the company of adults. Truth be told, he was lonely a lot of the time. He wasn't a great student, but he graduated high school, started some college, but it wasn't for him, so he didn't stick with it. He did try to pick it up periodically over time and got a few more classes under his belt, but life and the need to survive got in the way. So he got a job in a retail store and set out to do the best he could with what he had. Second boy grew up the son of an incredibly loving single mother who had an enormous amount of help from her very supportive parents. His grandmother and grandfather were his best friends growing up. His father wasn't on the scene, having left before he was born, but that was okay. From the stories he'd heard, he wasn't missing much. And he never once heard his mother utter a bad word about his father. Never once. In fact, when he asked his mother if she hated his father for leaving them, her response was, "How could I hate him? He gave me the most important thing in my life." The boy was quiet, liked reading, playing on a computer, and spending time with his family. He was a little quirky, maybe a little odd, but his family loved him for who he was. Hell, the whole family was odd, and they loved each other for it. He was supported and loved, and he knew it. He was told he could do anything he put his mind to, and that he was smart and funny, and above all else, a good person. School was a little rough because kids can be mean. But at home, he was surrounded by unconditional love and support. The family was by no means rich, but he never wanted for a single thing. And he was taught the value of a dollar and to work hard for what you want. Take a second, think about the thoughts and words that you formed as you heard the stories. What labels did you assign to each of these boys? For the first one, I'd guess some of you thought troubled, strange. Definitely thought gay, because, well, once that one's out there, that label sticks. How about unintelligent or slow? What about the second boy? Loved? Quiet? Introverted? Intelligent? What was your overall impression of the two boys? Did your mind assign the boys a race? If so, which race and why? Which boy has a better chance of being successful based on what you've learned? Each day, as we make our way through this complicated world, we are asked to quickly process complex thoughts and feelings with little or no information. Oftentimes, we have just our first impression to go on. The things we see and the stories we hear and tell shape our vision of ourselves, of each other, and of our place in this world. We reduce this information down to labels that we can quickly use to make sense of the people we interact with. According to Adam Alter, the author of our reading this morning, categorical labeling is a tool that humans use to resolve the impossible complexity of the environments we grapple to perceive. Like so many human faculties, it's adaptive and miraculous, but it also contributes to some of the deepest problems that face our species. Does this first impression we form, and the labels we therefore assign, make any difference to our lives, or the lives of the people we come into contact with, even if only for a brief interaction? According to numerous studies, it most definitely makes a difference. In fact, it makes a huge difference. The labels we assign to each other, and even to ourselves, not only have a huge impact on how we interact with one another, but also on the opportunities we present to ourselves and those around us. I think our reading this morning clearly illustrates how an incredibly arbitrary difference, something as simple as eye color, once highlighted and exploited, can severely affect how we interact with and treat one another, and even change our view of ourselves. How many of you were familiar with that Jane Elliott experiment? Did anyone ever go through that in school? Interesting. I was relatively familiar. I'd heard of it. I went to school in the North. And after stumbling upon the story again, I decided to dig a little bit deeper. It's an amazing story. There's a lot of differing opinion about the ethics involved. But at its root, I think it's amazing. First of all, the people of Riceville, Iowa were pissed. Pissed. Other teachers would not speak to her for the remaining 30 years she served there. Her son was beat up in school. Her daughter was surrounded by other kids who warned her that soon her mother would be sleeping with black men. And to this day, many people in that little town in Iowa literally hate Jane Elliott's guts. I mean, like, with a passion. They were so angry about being portrayed as bigots and eager to show that they are nice people that they beat up and ostracized their children. If beating up innocent children doesn't prove you're not a racist, I surely don't know what does. To me, the most eye-opening line from the story is an angry white viewer scolded Elliot for exposing white children to the discrimination that black children face every day. Black children are accustomed to the experience, the viewer argued, but white children are fragile and they might be scarred long after the demonstration ends. Elliot's response was, of course, right on when she asked why people were so concerned about these little white children being uncomfortable for a day while ignoring the pain a black child will endure their entire life. So basically, it's okay to treat black kids like crap because they're used to it. That's pretty much the message here. I guess the silver lining here is that this experiment was conducted in 1968, and no one thinks like this anymore. Thank goodness we got past all that. As Ellen DeGeneres humorously notes in the quote in your order of service this morning, which I really liked, the problem with labels is that they lead to stereotypes. And stereotypes lead to generalizations, and generalizations lead to assumptions, and assumptions lead back to stereotypes. It's a vicious cycle, and after you go around and around a bunch of times, you end up believing that all vegans only eat cabbage and all gay people love musicals. I think she's right on here. Some of that may be accurate. And we can go on with the stereotypes. If you're a liberal, you believe that everyone should drive an electric car and eat only food grown within 5 feet of where they happen to be standing. And you spend your weekends going door to door in your Birkenstocks with your Save the Whales petition. If you're a conservative, you run around with a semi-automatic rifle, wearing a Make America Great Again hat, you have a Confederate flag stuck to your forehead, and you yearn for the good old days. We've all thought these things, haven't we? Relying solely on these labels, stereotypes, and generalizations leads us down to the road to the point where Dwight R. Middleton says, we tend to treat labels as real rather than representations of reality. And then I think in order to sustain our already held opinions and beliefs about others, our innate confirmation bias kicks in. And everything someone says or does is seen, at least in our minds, through the lens of what we already believe to be true. It is in our nature to want to be right, and we train our minds to constantly reinforce our beliefs. Then we tend to react badly when those beliefs are called into question. Sort of like what happened when the nice non-racist white people of Riceville, Iowa, and around the country were suddenly faced with the fact that maybe they had just a little bit of work to do on the race front. They proved they weren't racists by pointing out that black children are different and used to it in order to justify their belief that white kids should never be subjected to that treatment. We live in a society where these labels are not only applied, but they're given weight. White is the superior race. Straight is the superior sexuality. Christian is the superior religion. Male is the superior sex. The list goes on and on. Over time, these ridiculous concepts of superiority, based largely on things completely beyond our control, become ingrained in minds, and moving past them becomes incredibly difficult, if not impossible. I honestly think that some of what we're seeing right now in our country, and in fact the world, is a whole lot of people are struggling to grasp the fact that straight white male is no longer the gold standard, and other groups are finally rising up and demanding equal treatment. To be sure, labels have the ability to be incredibly useful and empowering. I think a good example is what we are seeing evolve in real time within the LGBT community. Over the past several years, new labels and terminology have come into the lexicon, and these labels allow people to more accurately self-identify. When I was growing up, back in the good old days, we had the LGBT community. Then we added Q on to the end. So now we have the lesbians, the gays, the bisexual, transgender, and queers are represented. Great, everybody's in the tent. Not so fast. In the past few years, we've added asexual, pansexual, intersex, and a host of other labels and acronyms that help people more clearly identify themselves. And honestly, I find it all a little confusing. I also find it amazing at the same time. These young people are saying that your labels don't fit me or us, so we've come up with new ones, and you're going to use them. They refuse to fit into the pre-labeled boxes that were set up for them long ago, and they don't care if we're okay with it or not. They're determined to live life authentically and on their terms. Good for them. I don't need to understand. I just need to accept. Interestingly enough, in the Washington Post, I believe it was yesterday, Joy Maloney sent me an article saying that they're finding that it's becoming increasingly important, and it's very, very important that you listen to what trans people say to you and not bog yourselves down with brain scans and science. And it's a feeling. We need to listen to each other. So in the right context, labels can definitely help. But even seemingly positive or harmless labels can cause damage if we fail to see the person underneath. Like most things, it's all about perspective. Are you the labeler or the labelee? Take, for instance, labeling someone attractive. Sounds like a wonderful label to be graced with. And from where I stand looking out at all of you, it's quite obvious you understand and have suffered from that label. But we've all heard stories of people who were lonely because they were perceived as being out of others' leagues. What about smart? That sounds like a good one. Maybe not to the person wearing it. To be smart adds a level of heightened expectation. While I don't get a lot of attractive or smart labels my way, I'm sometimes referred to as the fun one. Fun is a nice label, right? Yes, of course. But it again sets up a level of expectation that is sometimes hard for us to see past. Because attractive ones get lonely, the smart ones struggle, and the fun ones do get depressed. Clearly defined labels give us an unambiguous picture of the world. They help us make sense and quickly move on with our lives. But unfortunately, the world isn't unambiguous. In fact, it's anything but. We like things to be black and white, but the world doesn't really work that way. Speaking of black and white, no matter how hard we try, we simply can't outrun those particular labels. I recall a conversation I had a long time ago with a wonderful black woman who I worked with. She was an amazing person, quirky in all the right ways. She also happened to be a Jehovah's Witness, so we had lots of really interesting conversations. One time we were talking about race, and she confided in me that it really bothers her when people pretend like they don't notice that she's black. I asked her why. Wouldn't you rather people not notice the color of your skin? Her response was no. To pretend like you don't notice that I'm black is to rob me of one of my most clearly defining characteristics. What I want is for you to notice that I'm black and not care. Not treat me any differently than you would anyone else, because it doesn't matter. We are all different, and we should embrace and celebrate these differences, not pretend like they don't exist. She also, by the way, absolutely did not like being identified as African American. Told you she was a little quirky, which is why I didn't label her as such today. One day I mustered the nerve to ask her why, and she replied in her typically funny fashion, "I've never been to Africa, and I don't intend to go." "No thanks, they have too many things there that'll eat you." "I'm fine just being a regular old American." God, I miss Brenda. All these years later, though, I still remember the two lessons she taught me. Don't pretend that we're not all different. Just find your way to a place where it doesn't matter. And don't stick your labels on me. Let me pick my own. Let's get back to the two boys I talked about earlier. I'm sure you were waiting with bated breath. What if both of these stories are actually about the same boy? What if I told you they're both about me? Two different versions of the same childhood. All you have to go on is what you're told. How does this information impact your opinion? What if I went further and told you that I firmly believe that along with being raised in a loving and warm home, the success I've had in my life was directly attributable to two men? The first, which you might find a little surprising, is my father. I believe that he did the best thing he possibly could have done for me when he left. Maybe he didn't love my mother or me. Maybe he wasn't ready to be a father. Or maybe he realized I'd be better off without him. Or maybe he was just a truly awful person who didn't care about anybody. Probably that one. Whichever it is, I truly believe that if he had stuck around, my life would be very different today. The other was a man named Jim Nolting. He was a regional vice president for the company I started working for out of high school. Jim saw something in me, and he had the ability to look beyond any shortcomings, and he lifted me up and mentored me throughout my career. He was a constant presence, there to make sure that I had what I succeeded, that I had what I needed to succeed. Oh, and he was also a deeply devout evangelical Christian. And from Mississippi, so I'm assuming a Republican. Stereotypes, right? Yeah. Pretty easy to jump there. This summer, our wonderful team of speakers will explore the idea of labels, the ones we use, how they affect our lives and those around us, and even how our perception of them might change over our lifetime. As Unitarian Universalists, our first principle calls on us to see the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And I think that's where we have to start. Even when it's hard or seemingly impossible, we're called to realize that every single person has worth. That's number one for a reason. Probably because it's the most important, but for me, it's because it's the one I need to read first every time I refer to the principles. Because I'd be lying if I didn't say that I find it increasingly hard to respect the worth and dignity of a whole lot of people these days. I'm trying, but man, they're making it difficult. But I have to keep believing that if we try to view people through the lens of worth and dignity as a starting point, before we assign them labels based on first impressions, we can be the change we wish to see in the world. We must do what we can to look beyond labels and first impressions. And we must point out injustices when we see them. I've become fond of another little tool that goes with confirmation bias called pattern interruption. Sometimes all it takes to help someone see another way is to be upfront, that's a new honest and upfront. That's your takeaway from today. We got new words. To be honest and upfront, there you go, and share your differing viewpoint in a non-confrontational manner. Responding to someone you know to not be true with a simple, "Well, that's not the way I see it," might just be what a person needs to move beyond their labels, stereotypes, or bias. Or it might not work. But at least you tried and attempted to approach the situation in love. To quote Adam Alter again, labeling isn't always a cause for concern, and it's often very useful. It would be impossible to catalog the information we process during our lives without the aid of labels like friendly, deceitful, tasty, and harmful. But it's important to recognize that the people we label as black, white, rich, poor, smart, and simple seem blacker, whiter, richer, poorer, smarter, and simpler merely because we've labeled them so. Labels stick. That's kind of the point of labels, isn't it? Use them wisely. Blessed be and amen. Please stand in body or spirit and join in singing "We Are a Gentle Angry People," hymn number 170 in your gray hymnal. We're going to sing every single verse.